Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of money power. That's right. Usually I say mind power. But today we're going to be talking about a subject that's near and dear to all of us. It is about the green stuff, dollars. Well, maybe some people would say, why not gold? Why not silver? Well, we're going to be talking with Peter Bilagos. He's put together a book titled Why Bother? And his subtitle on this is How the Worst Pickup Line of My Life Changed My Financial Future and How It Can Change Yours, Too. On that note, let's talk with Peter. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's a delight. You're down in sunshiny Florida where you've just finished giving a talk, and I'm assuming it's about financially educating other people. You are a man that got into this, speaking, training, educating people about money, after having been a financial advisor yourself. Now, I would just be curious to know why it was that this was a career direction that you opted to follow. Why is it that this particular venue was something that was intriguing to you? Were you planning on becoming a multimillionaire before you were 30 years of age?
Well, I was. What I was planning on was not getting into a whole bunch of credit card debt when I was in college. I went to college during the golden age of credit cards, and during that time, I signed up for every credit card they put in front of me, and pretty soon I was able to borrow $65,000 on 8 credit cards. And this is a guy who had student loans and a guy who was working a part-time minimum wage job. And I borrowed $5,000 of that $65,000 before I got to a place where I couldn't even make the minimum payment. And at the time, I had no idea how credit cards worked. I was not a finance major. I didn't know what paying the minimum meant or what it didn't mean or what it meant when you didn't pay it. And I realized that at 19 years old, there's a lot of stuff that I don't know, and I need to do something about this. And as I started learning about personal finance, I realized there were a lot of people just like me who had been ignored by the financial world. Because a lot of the times the financial advisors, they want to go after the what we call the high net worth individual.
Right.
But what I was focusing on is, you know, the people like me that had barely any money at all or were deep in debt. What do we do with those individuals? How do we service them? So I started a financial planning firm that specialized in those people, and I realized that, you know what, I'm spending most of my time not advising, I'm spending most of my time educating. So I got completely out of the advising business several years ago, and now all I do is speak and write books on money management with an emphasis on young Americans and an emphasis on people of modest income, sort of those everyday Americans, or the 99% is the term that that we're all using right now.
Well, I think that that's very important because there is such, oh my goodness, when I found out, I stopped in mid-sentence there, when I found out how many credit cards are, applications are submitted to young people in college, I was stunned because anybody with 50 cents worth of common sense would never want to give a credit card to someone that doesn't know anything really about how to work with money. People have gone through cycles of bankruptcy. We've got situations right now where they're saying student debt, students shouldn't have to pay on it. I mean, I just am absolutely blown away with what I think is a la-la attitude about responsibility and dealing with money in a down-to-earth way. Why do you think it got so far away from the practical understanding of working with money? What happened?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, and the answer is actually a rather practical answer. There's an old joke that you've probably heard before, and it was Bob Hope who said it. He said, a bank is a place that will lend you money the moment you can prove you don't need it. And the joke was to say that we're going to give people money that we know will be able to pay us back on time. Mm-hmm. And something happened several years ago in the lending industry where someone at some meeting stood up and said, you know what? What if we started lending money to people who would never pay us back, who would be in debt to us forever, people who we could beat up with late fees and kicking up the interest rate over and over again on them? What if we gave it to those people? What if we started extending credit to those individuals? And that's kind of how we had this reverse of the fact that, you know what, if I'm in the business of lending money, I actually don't want to get paid back. I want somebody to stay in debt to me forever, and I'd love to be able to slap them around a little bit with some late fees. So the whole industry really did change in targeting individuals who didn't have much education on this, college students or young people who had not been through it before, and maybe people who didn't have access to a lot of money from an income or something like that, so they'd really, really want that credit. And it really erupted several years ago. Thankfully, the legislation, the rules have tightened quite a bit, making it difficult, but there's certainly still that that aggressive nature of targeting the individuals who cannot make the payment.
Oh, I think that's so true. And I know of a number of people who have, you might say, a very consistent, solid income. They've got very good credit rating. And today, when they want to go and refinance, they are just being grilled as if it's almost equal to being grilled by the FBI because you've committed a crime, and they haven't committed a crime. And they say, I just don't get it. You have all these credit card companies out here that, my good, you sign up for a credit card, and you can spend tens of thousands of dollars and nobody bats an eye. Just, you know, make the monthly payment. But if I want to go and make an ordinary loan that, let's say, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, the bankers, they knew the people of their neighborhood and so on and so forth, and they would have said, okay, we'll loan you some money. We understand it. We know that this is what you're going to do. We have become so askew with distortion. It really is a almost a nightmarish situation. It's gotten to a point, so many people say, the banks, do you want to trust the banks? Look at how they've done such a mess. They can't even run their own business. They're taking the money that we pay them, and they go and they put it in investments that have gone down the toilet. I don't know about conversations you're having, but I can tell you there are so many people that I speak with that are so disgusted with it. Now, you know that people can be financially independent. What would you say to the average individual today that is maybe they've lost their job or they've had to take a job like I've known a number of people have that's maybe $20,000, $30,000 less a year income? What can we do for them so that they know that they have a chance to have that financial independence, that American dream of self-sufficiency? What can we do, Peter?
What I think we can do, one thing I have been saying to everyone that will listen to me, are two very, very simple words. And those two words are start small. And I think the reason that the economy has not turned around yet is because everybody is thinking big. You know, we have rescued the big banks, or we think of these big, big stimulus packages under both Republican and Democratic presidents. And we're thinking big, and what we really need to start doing is thinking small. The title of my book is called Why Bother? Because that's what I have been hearing from individuals over the past few years, ever since the markets crashed in 2008. People say to me, why bother checking my credit? My house was foreclosed. I know it's terrible. Why bother? I know my stocks are down. Why bother even opening up this 401k statement? And what I try to convince people is start small. Take the smallest possible step that you can to change your financial life. And maybe that step is just looking at your credit. You know it's going to be terrible, but just look at it, because there might be something on there that is a legitimate mistake that's not your fault. And even if there are a bunch of terrible things that are your fault, there might be something on there that's not. And you might just be able to get that off and get your score just a little bit higher. Or maybe that small thing is saying, you know what, I've done business with a big bank and I'm not getting the service that I want. I don't have the relationship that I want. I feel like I'm treated by a number. Maybe starting small is going and looking and talking to a smaller bank or a credit union. You know, when we see the news and about these toxic mortgages, we don't often see those tiny, tiny local community banks and the credit unions being looped into that group. It's usually the big banks, and the stimulus money didn't really find its way to those little tiny groups in your community. I really think that the way that we're going to stimulate the economy is by going small, staying in our communities. Part of this we're already doing with things like buying local food and farm to table. And I think we just need to expand that with local businesses, small businesses. Putting your money with those individuals, working with those individuals, I think is going to stimulate the economy for everyone. And for your individual life, just start small. Just take a tiny, tiny step and don't worry so much about the rest of it. Just take that first step.
I think that's a great idea. I think that sometimes it can be rather overwhelming when we try to make something too big for our emotions and mental self to digest. And I think starting small is great. One of my favorite stories is about a lady who, after she reached retirement, this was an African-American woman, and she had worked as a housekeeper. And out of her paycheck, she had deducted 10% for I don't know how many years. And she had deposited it with a local bank. And one day, and she had been their customer for many, many years, one of the managers came up to her. And she just put the money in the bank. She didn't even worry about compound interest or anything else. And she got an invitation to sit down with the manager at the bank. And everybody liked her. And she said, well, what is this about? And he said, are you aware you have well over $100,000 in your savings account? And she looked at him. She didn't have a clue. And he said, my dear, what would you like to do with that? And she was just stunned. She had no idea she had saved because it had compounded too. But that consistency of starting small for her ended up giving her an option. And this gentleman was so gracious, and he sat with her and he talked with her. And she said, my goodness, I had no idea. He said, you've got something here that if you're wise, you can work with it so that it can support you, you know, even in your elderly years. And she was 65 at the time. So I think of this story frequently. And she didn't make a lot of money. She wasn't at the high end of the wage scale. And so you look at it and you find out of a story like this where someone just does this. You mentioned a 401k or someone, if they wanted to, could buy savings bonds or whatever it is. Just do something where they begin and start small. I think that that is just a marvelous way to do it. You have a story in your book about a young man, Kyle McDonald.
Yes.
Share the story about Kyle. This is just something that's so much fun. We always like hearing stories like this about someone's success. Share his story.
Well, Kyle McDonald is you cannot get a better example of starting small. Kyle had a dream to own a home, and there was just one thing standing in the way, which is the thing that stands in most people's way, and that is the money. He did not have the money to buy a home. But what Kyle did do is he had a paperclip. He had one red paperclip. And what he did through a series of trades is he traded that paperclip for a pen, and then he traded that pen for a doorknob. And then a few trades later, he had himself a Coleman stove. And then a few trades later, he had himself a ski-mobile. And then a few trades later, he eventually had a house. He traded something for a house in a town in Canada. And he just did these little tiny trades that got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden he had himself a house. And, you know, one of the things that when I hear the story of Kyle, and you can look him up on oneredpaperclip.com, great, great story. When I hear the story about Kyle, I think of two things. I think the first thing is, you know, don't think so much about what you don't have. I can sit here all day and tell you what I don't have, but I start to think of things that I do have. You know, most financial advisors will force you to write down your assets and your liabilities. And when I was doing this, when I was a financial advisor, that's what I would do. That's what financial advisors do. In the book, one of the things that I recommend is I recommend people write down their resources. What resources do you have that might be able to put more money in your pocket somehow? It could be a red paperclip, or it could be the fact that you can teach people how to play the clarinet, or you're a wonderful cook, or you're very good at organizing. List your resources down because those are of value to someone. And I think the other thing with Kyle's story, which to me is very, very interesting, is that some of the trades that he did, you really think that one of the two people really got a terrible deal. You know, some of the things that he traded, you'd think, why did he give that up for what he got? That's terrible. But what that made me realize is that, you know what? Different people value different things. And when sometimes we get these ideas in our heads of scarcity and there's not enough to go around, there is plenty to go around. And the reason there is plenty to go around is because different people value different things. And what sometimes we forget is that we have a lot of things right now in our life that are of very, very little value to us, but they are of immense value to someone else. And that's why I suggest people list those resources. One example is I give is the prom dress that you just wore. Prom is now over. That prom dress that you just wore may not really be of any value to you anymore. But if you were to donate to one of these services that collect prom dresses, that's going to be of infinite value to someone a year from now who cannot afford to buy a dress to go to that prom. So that's another way that the everyday average person can not only improve their life, but improve the lives of everybody around them, finding out what your resources are and how you can trade them with other individuals.
Yes, the good old-fashioned system of barter. I witnessed mm-hmm. that the other day. There is a friend of mine who owns a thrift store, and two lovely ladies came in, and they had boxes, and this is something that occurs on a regular basis with her. And they said, we would like to put something on consignment. She said, well, this is more like a thrift store. I don't put things on consignment. What is it that you've got? And so they had these lovely, lovely plates and glasses, exquisite items. And she said, well, how about if you walk around the store and you find out what you'd like to trade? These ladies had the greatest time of their lives going around my friend's store looking for things and came up with some items. And she said, is that what you'd like to have? They said, yeah. She said, okay, it's done. And that's what you just gave an example of, bartering, trade. What is
absolutely
valuable?
Trade and sure, yeah. Trade, it's donating, just, you know, everything. Absolutely. That's it's a great way to sort of get some activity going in the economy. Or another chapter in my book is a chapter about lightening up, getting rid of the clutter in your life. One of the things that's going to do is it's going to put more money in your pocket because you're spending less to maintain stuff and clean stuff and organize stuff. And I recommend that people lighten up, whether that's donating, trading, whatever it may be. You have a lot more than you think.
I think that that is so true, and there's so many options to work with. You have information. You have a chapter, and you say how to put some money in your pocket quickly and easily. And you talk about Kim Kardashian, and she was supposed to have her cable hooked up. Tell us what happened with Kim and how she was able to manage to take care of her needs.
Well, it's an interesting story about Kim Kardashian, and I know that some of your listeners right now are thinking, okay, I get this philosophical stuff that I have more than I think and I have resources. Peter, can you give me something practical that I can literally do tomorrow to change my financial life? And I made up that story about Kim Kardashian. And what I basically said is I said, you know, if Kim Kardashian suddenly moved to New York City and she wanted cable TV, what the cable company would do is they would say, Kim, we will sign you up for cable, but we need from you a $50 deposit. And we will give this back to you after you've paid your bill on time after 5 years or if you've canceled it. So Kim pays that $50 deposit, she pays her cable bill, and then all of a sudden she decides to move away from New York back to Los Angeles. She cancels her cable, shuts it off, moves back to Los Angeles. But that cable company is still holding that $50 check, that $50 deposit check. And at that point, they have two options with that check. Number one, they can track her down and send her that check, and legally they have to at least attempt that. Or number two, if they cannot find her, they can give it to the unclaimed funds office at the New York State Treasury. Every single state in the nation has a Treasury Department, and every Treasury Department has an unclaimed funds office. And that's where all this missing money comes from. If you were a member of a giant class action lawsuit and you didn't even know it, maybe you used a certain toothpaste for 2 years and that toothpaste company got sued and you're entitled to $20. Or there is a cable bill that you paid a deposit you totally forgot about. You might be entitled to that, or a tax refund, a property tax credit. All this is collected at the unclaimed funds office in your state. And the good news is that there is one website, unclaimed.org, and that website is where all of the unclaimed funds offices in the country are located. So you can literally go to any state, type in every single state that you live in, and find out if you are entitled to any unclaimed funds. When I went there, I was entitled to $17.77. My parents were each entitled to $150 from a stock sale that happened, a stock split that happened that they never got the money for. Some of the students that I've come in contact with have gone onto the website after they've seen me speak, and they've gotten $500. One student got $6,000 from this particular website. And unclaimed.org is totally, totally free. You do not have to pay a fee for it. And right now there is $32 billion in unclaimed money on this program. And, we're all talking about stimulus money. We already have it. It's right there. And if some of your listeners check out unclaimed.org, they can find out if they or the people they know and love are entitled to any of that money.
Now, do they, some people get married, their names change. What would they do? Just enter their name? Is that all that they have to do?
Yeah, and you can enter your name if you have you're recently married. Also enter your maiden name. You can enter your friends as well, and if you would like, and I did this, you can enter Kim Kardashian's name, and you will find that Bank of America, the last time I checked, owed her $56.88 from their Malibu branch.
Amazing. You also have another website. And this has to do with products, retail. It's called You Promise. You, the letter U, promise, the whole word, .com. What in the world turned you onto that one?
Well, I remember the market that I work with. There are individuals of very modest incomes or almost no incomes or maybe people who are deep in debt and people who are saying, Peter, I don't have this 10% of my income to invest. I am barely making ends meet. One of the things I kept hammering is, well, start small, start simple, and they would hammer back, well, where do I start? So I found unclaimed.org, and I've been sending individuals there. YouPromise.com is another sort of no-brainer site, and your listeners should know, Donna, that I do not work for any of these companies or sites. I'm a completely independent financial author and speaker, so if I recommend something, I think it's because individuals should check it out. But YouPromise is it's basically a discount program. And by becoming a member of You Promise, you get a discount on all these products that we buy every day at Coca-Cola, at ExxonMobil, Kellogg's cereal, all these products that we buy every day. And being a You Promise member, when you shop at one of the participating stores or buy one of the participating products, you get a discount. But you don't get the discount at the cash register. You get that discount by having it swept into your You Promise account. And You Promise was created by a gentleman named Michael Brommer, whose goal was to help Americans save for college. And one of the interesting things that the site wants you to do is they want you to take the money that's collected in your You Promise account and put it into a 529 college savings plan. Well, several years ago, when I found out about this, I said, well, I'm done with college, and I don't have any children at the moment. What if I don't want to open a 529? What happens to the money? And they said, well, just send us a letter, and we will mail you a check for the money in your account. So you're kind of walking around doing your life like you normally do. You're shopping where you normally shop. But as you shop, nickels, dimes, quarters, and occasionally dollars will get shaved and put into your You Promise account, and those start to build up. I find for most people, they can expect to earn about $100 a year in shaving these nickels, dimes, and quarters off of their everyday purchases. For some, it's more. For some, it's less. But it's one of those few things in the financial world where I say, why not do this? Why not have just a little bit of money coming back to you? They've charged it anyway, so it might as well come back.
You talk about a subject in your book that I think is so important. I don't know about anybody else. I get very weary about the hype about gold. You see all of these advertisements saying, oh, doesn't gold feel good in your hand, and gee, this is what you should, invest in gold. And the whole advertising spiel, in my view, is based on fear. They are, and they're very good at it, but it's, gee whiz, this is the only way to go. Well, you can't eat this stuff. And one of the points that you bring out in your book is that it costs you to store it. You've got to have insurance on it. And it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more than what you expect. I would love to have you share with my audience information about the gold and silver market.
Absolutely. Basically, the reason you're hearing a lot about gold is because of two reasons. The first is that there's just a lot of uncertainty in the economy. We are at war. We do have a high unemployment. That's one of the reasons why people are talking about gold. Whenever there's uncertainty, we always start to look at gold. The second reason is that the amount of debt that we have as a nation, the federal debt, is growing so much and has grown to such a large number that people are starting to wonder, are these dollars going to be worthless? Inflation is silently creeping in, and it's difficult for us to track it. Even though the government tracks inflation numbers, those inflation numbers often exclude everyday items like food and energy that we have to pay for, even if they want to exclude it from the inflation index. And people are saying, you know what, I'm worried these dollars aren't going to be worth anything because they can just keep printing more and more of them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run to something that they can't create more of, and that's gold or silver. And once that happens, the snowball starts rolling where you're right. People do crank that wheel of fear. They crank that wheel of fear, get in now, you got to buy it now. But what we have to remember are a few things. Number one, I tell individuals, whether it's gold, whether it's Facebook, plan, don't panic. Plan, don't panic. Don't necessarily run right in and drop everything and invest all your money in gold. If you are going to take a step into gold, that's all you can do. You can take just a step and buy a very, very tiny amount. And in a minute, I'm going to tell your listeners how I think they should do that. The second thing is to remember all those gold advertisements. The people that are talking about gold often sell gold. And that's just a general rule in the world of personal finance is whoever is talking about it, do they also sell it? I do not sell gold. I do not work for youpromise.com. I don't work for unclaimed.org. So that's one of the things I think we also have to remember with gold and silver. Looking at the economy, it is a tough argument to make that the dollar is starting to go down. It's tough to argue against that. The dollar is starting to go down. One of the reasons that the U.S. dollar has maintained its strength is simply because the euro looks even worse. So we're kind of the prettiest girl at the ugly dance, if you want to use sort of an analogy there. The U.S. dollar is strong, but a lot of the reason why is because Europe is not so strong, and people are kind of going to the only safe thing that they can go with. And one of the things that I always ask when I don't know what to do, I go back to where I come from, which is, well, how can I start small? And one of the things that I recommend people do, if they are interested in taking a step into precious metals, is consider buying silver American Eagle coins, which right now are about $30, $35-ish. Consider buying silver American Eagle coins with the idea that if that silver goes down, what you have essentially bought is the Christmas, birthday, bat mitzvah, graduation, wedding, and new baby gifts for everybody in your life for the next few years. I have no idea what video game I'm supposed to get my niece, my nephew. They already have 2,000 stuffed animals. So I am buying and giving them silver coins. And that's one thing that I recommend people do. If silver goes up, you've got some silver coins in your pocket, and your portfolio has gone up. If silver goes down, what you've done is you've purchased gifts for the people in your family, and that's money that you were going to spend anyway. And you might as well give them something that at least will always hold some of its value.
Well, Peter, you have so much good information in your book. You talk about a site, bankrate.com, which is a place people can go to if they want to get the best interest rates on a bank account, if they're stockpiling their emergency fund, et cetera. You go into what we've just discussed, the gold and silver market. Your recommendation, I think, is an excellent one. You have a chapter on insurance, umbrella policies, checking credit ratings. This book, even though it's not a real thick book, it is packed with wonderful information. And I think that no matter what a person's age is, no matter where they are financially, so many people have gone through really major shifts just in the last 2 to 3 years. And many of them, regardless of their age, are just sweating bullets. They're going, is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Your book, Why Bother?, really goes a long way towards addressing that and puts power back into the hand of the individual. where they can make changes in their financial life, even if it's just little bites at a time, and come out ahead. My guest today has been Peter Bilegas. His book is Why Bother? How the Worst Pickup Line, and you're going to have to read his book to find out about that one, of his life changed his financial future, and he likes to think that it can help change yours too. Peter, thank you so much. Your website is peterbilegas.com, and his last name is spelled B like boy, I-E-L-A-G-U-S, B-I-E-L-A-G-U-S. Peter, thanks for being my guest today. It's been a delight having you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. And we are taking a break. This is Donna Sebo. Check out this book, Why Bother? You got a teenager? Great way for both parents as well as kids to get together. If you're a teacher and you're wanting to share something with the younger generation, start them young. They will have an ace in their pocket they'll be able to carry for their entire life. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, it will be my pleasure to do so. Give me a call at 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to let you know about my guests that are going to be coming on board next week. I am just thrilled when I have such a diversity of material that crosses my review desk because it shows me how many good people are out there doing different things. And on Monday, we're going to be talking with Marjorie Wildcraft. She's in Texas, and she put together a video about how to grow your own groceries. Well, I have to tell you, when I started looking at the video, I was stunned. This woman has done a phenomenal job. She and her family live in Texas. We'll be telling you all about it. But she's got the A to Z on self-sustaining lifestyle, and she just did a marvelous job. So we're going to be talking about that. And then, I love this title, Roger Frank. It says, "Don't carve the turkey with a chainsaw." He just won an award. The title alone is just really a lot of fun. But it's all about communication. It's about relationships, professional, personal, all of this. And then on Wednesday of next week, we're going to be talking with Lou Paradise. This is all oriented towards wellness and what we can do to keep ourselves healthy, happy, and be aware that we can be more in charge of our own lives. And then we're going to be traveling into the fiction world a little bit, but it's not that far away from fact. John Pankus has a book called The Take Us, and this is about the engine of the future. That's right. And so many times in a fiction book, a lot of truth can be packed so that it can be communicated to the general population. Nobody's going to sue you. One of the big books in the history of publishing that really got a lot of heat many, many years ago, and I learned of this through my husband, was the book The Carpetbaggers. Well, it was based, and it had a lot of fact in it. In fact, the person that wrote The Carpetbaggers was sued by Howard Hughes, I believe, and some other people. And no names were mentioned, but almost everybody that read the book figured out who it was about. The reality of ESP. Next Friday, we're going to be talking with Russell Targ, one of the foremost researchers regarding research on the paranormal. Russell is almost 80 years old. This man is world-renowned. He's been on my show more than once. This new book of his, The Reality of ESP, is captivating. So we've got a great lineup of guests. And remember, all you have to do is check on my website to find out about people that are coming up. Also check here at BBS. And that's how simple it is. In the interim, if you want to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a little bit of trivia with you today. We hear about all kinds of different projects that are done, and this Earth of ours is just an absolutely phenomenal place. And I came across some information I did not know anything about. Have you ever heard of the Kola Super Deep Borehole? I hadn't. Well, apparently it is 7.6 miles deep. It is the biggest man-made hole going down into the Earth, to the best of our knowledge, in the world. It's in Russia. Now, it was drilled in 1989 as an experiment. They wanted to see how deep people could drill into the Earth's crust. And apparently, in doing this, there was a rumor that was developed that says it's a well to hell, and they could hear the voices of the damned from its depths. And as they went deeper, obviously, it got very, very hot. So that is 7.6 miles. In Antarctica, there was an ice core drilling that was done of 2 miles. Now, this was done by a European group. It was a project for ice coring in Antarctica. It drilled the Dome Concordia hole into the Antarctic ice. And because of that, and I'm sure you've seen programs where they have these huge, huge cores of ice that are kept frozen, so they can evaluate what's gone on in history. And they said it's 740,000 years of climate history, geology, and comet strikes. It's amazing what they have been able to find out. Now, as far as seafloor drilling, yes, we all know about those offshore oil rigs. Well, how about in New Zealand? There was a ship called the Joint Oceanographic Institutions for Deep Earth Sampling Resolution. They drilled the deepest hole ever made in the seafloor on a single expedition. And what they were able to get from that drilling was 35 million years of geological history. So they went down, pulled up these cores, 35 million years. That's a pretty big number to wrap around in your head, isn't it? And here in the U.S., we have a copper mine called the Bingham Canyon Mine. It's located in mountains of Utah, right outside of Salt Lake City. It is the largest human-made excavation. It measures 0.75 miles deep and 2.5 miles wide. But that's all right. There is another place that I was amazed to hear about, because I don't think I've ever heard of this. I don't know that you have. But in Russia, there's the Mir Diamond Mine. It was the very first diamond mine in that country. It's now abandoned. It's located in Siberia. It's the world's second largest artificial hole, and all air traffic above it is prohibited because there is a suction effect. by the massiveness of this hole, and they've had crashes, helicopter crashes. So they've outlawed flying above it. So it creates maybe a wind shear, who knows? It's just a phenomena because of the massiveness of its hole. Just absolutely incredible. And then in Mexico, the world's deepest water-filled sinkhole is located in a particular state of Mexico, and one of the first divers to try to reach the bottom died when they tried to do it. And NASA then has sent a robotic vehicle down to measure the extent of this hole in Mexico, and it's 1,043 feet. Just amazing stuff. Because of technology, we're finding out more and more information. We're finding out about underwater caves. Robotic machines can go where people cannot. And those that love to search underwater caves, it's very, very dangerous. It is exceedingly, it's just an incredible experience. And those few programs I've ever seen on it are just amazing to watch. And again, technology is moving us forward in a fascinating way, making us aware of all of the unique aspects of this phenomenal planet that we live on. So I just wanted to share that little bit of trivia with you. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a call at 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share just a little bit of something with you. And again, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share some information about how to keep your yard mosquito-free. And the reason that is important, here in the Pacific Northwest, because of our cooler temperatures, usually we don't have mosquitoes. They're starting to come out, but we are advised constantly, because of the rain that we have, don't have items in your yard that are going to be holding stagnant water. You want to make sure that you have anything, any buckets or anything else that might have water in it, dump it out, and keep everything pretty dry. Well, mosquitoes create a real negative situation. They're the carriers of malaria. Malaria is one of the biggest killers on the planet. And there are so many things we need to pay attention to. And in the Pacific Northwest, we're not plagued with them like they are up in Alaska and like areas like Florida, the East Coast, Virginia. I mean, Alaska has the super, super 777s. And you also have up there the little no-see-um, whose bite is just misery. And you can have screens up, and they still get through. That's why they're called no-see-ums. They are incredibly vicious. And I've been in situations where the swarms have just come out, and you've got this black fog that will cover you. And if you don't have a repellent of some kind or in the right kind of clothing, you're going to literally be eaten alive by them because they are coming out, and they're hungry. Well, West Nile virus, Eastern equine encephalitis, there's just so many things that mosquitoes can carry. And people in general are fairly aware of it. So what do? They go in for insect repellents. Well, now there's a lot of questioning regarding the sprays. They apparently, a lot of the insect repellents that we are able to get on the counters or buy through the stores, they have hormone disruptors, and they're concerned about carcinogenic chemicals. Now, they say, though studies documented harmful effects only in higher doses than municipal mosquito spray trucks deliver, there's also the question, do these sprays really work? And some research suggests that the chemicals kill only mosquitoes that are airborne when the spray is released. Others claim that spraying is the best defense we have. Well, there's a long history of this. The Panama Canal, they went and dumped so many chemicals up there, down there in the Panama Canal, they killed everything and anything that was even remotely alive. But they didn't have a problem with mosquitoes after that because it was killing so many people. Malaria was just really, really bad. So what you can do, what you want to do is check with your local health department spraying policy. Most towns, most cities spray after dusk, when mosquitoes are at their worst. And what they are finding is that they, in the process of doing this, have ended up killing a lot of bees that are sort of in for the night. So if you are aware of this being done in your community, you want to be sure that you stay indoors and you want to keep your windows closed and your air conditioning units off. Well, depending on where you are, that may not be so comfortable. You want to minimize your exposure to the chemical. And you can also ask trucks not to spray your area. That is especially important if anyone in your family has asthma, which can be aggravated by the spray. You might get some drift from your neighbor's yard, but your exposure will be yes. And it suggested you bypass the DIY backyard fogger sprays. They contain the same chemicals, but without a licensed professional to apply them, it could be a problem. But we just have to watch it. We're learning more and more. And there are some natural ways of dealing with mosquitoes. One is keeping standing water out of your yard. And just be aware you can do certain things. Citronella candles you can burn. They smell terrible as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, be aware of that because this is a time of the year where you're going to end up with a bunch of bites if you're not careful. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.